M. Smart Health Talk offers the kind of information that can save your life and save you money, making sure you're getting the biggest Smart Health bang for your buck. We'll keep you up to date on the latest in nutrition, health, and what it takes to keep your home safe for you and your family. Remember, tune in every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. for Smart Health Talk, KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Right before me, my newfound hippie side. Once ignore these conspiracies online. At the window, visions of the earth. Sign me up now, make sure you use your smart. Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Would your children lie to see Mother Nature's
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk, and we have a great show planned for you today. Later, we're going to be talking to Catherine Kilduff, and she's a lawyer from the Center for Biological Diversity. And this agency is actually a large group of lawyers that are kind of from a special breed, and that they like to go out there and fight for different causes and people that really don't have anyone else to fight for them. And one of that group that we're going to be talking about today that really don't have that many people out there to help fight for them are our bluefin tuna. And you might know, if you're a sushi lover, you know tuna, okay, because that's actually the number one choice for sushi. And over in Japan especially, oh my gosh, they go crazy over the fatty belly of the tuna, and that's called toro. And so, you know, if you love your sushi and you love your tuna sushi especially, you'll want to stay tuned and find out what's happening, because this delicious fish is actually on the verge of becoming extinct. And if we don't do something and take action right away, of which the Center for Biological Diversity has tried to do, then the tuna could be in big trouble. First of all, though, we're going to have Mei Wang, and this is a really interesting story, because I have been to a lot of health food stores in my time, and never have I been to a health food store that was actually 100% organic. And those of you that listen to our show know that, you know, I love organic food, and that's always a priority with me for a lot of good reasons. But this store, you know, most of them that you go to, they have like some organic, but then they have other products that aren't our conventional products as well. And with Whole Foods, it's like 30% is organic. So this show had making the commitment to be 100% organic is really a big deal. And so we have them here today, and they were actually turned out they were in my right in my backyard over in Goodwin's Organics in Riverside, California. So they have lots of great services for, they really reach out to their community. They have services for kids, parents, and those looking to really change their lifestyle. They have classes there that will help to counsel you. And so I want to, you know, learn all about them and all these different services and share that with you. And we have Mei Wang here to help tell us all about it. So Mei, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay. Welcome to Smart Health Talk. Okay, well, why don't you just start off and just kind of tell us a little bit about Goodwin's, and then I wanted to spend some time. We just have, you know, a couple of minutes. Maybe towards the end we could talk about all these great suggestions that you had for things that parents and kids could do together to learn about healthy eating. I thought you did a really good job on that. So first, tell us about Goodwin's.
Sure. Well, Goodwin's is actually a family-owned store. It's now the fourth generation is, operating Goodwin's Organics, but they started out in Crestline with a neighborhood market. And Martin Goodwin, who's, the son of, the fourth generation down, he really got interested in organic food and saw that there wasn't anything out there that offered all organic, for everything from produce to drinks to prepare foods. And he loved Whole Foods, didn't have a Whole Foods anywhere near him, but he'd always drive out and visit and found that even Whole Foods, is only a certain percentage organic. So he decided that he was going to open the store here in Riverside. So it's one of a kind. It's, as far as we know, it's California's first all-organic store, which means everything that comes in to the store has to be certified organic. So it's a really unique place. If you haven't visited, you walk in and find out this is a little bit different from a, normal grocery store. We do have an upstairs that is more for education. And we also have an indoor farmer's market that happens twice a month. So there's things about the store that do make it very unique. Martin, the owner, he really likes to see it as a lifestyle change center. So that's the vision, is that it helps something like this, a neighborhood market that's all organic, can help people be healthy, which he calls vitalize your living. So that's really the mission.
I love that idea. I think that, people need some support. They, that's why we have this show. It's because there's so much that has to be done as far as education goes, to help people to be able to change their lifestyle. What are some of the classes that you guys have there?
Yes, so we've had a variety of classes. We've had guests, lecturers and guest chefs. So far, our cooking classes have been very eclectic, actually. It's been based on demand, so we've had everything from, ethnic-themed classes from Asian to Mexican to even a wild edibles class that was purely based on demand, where we actually went and picked wild edibles by the Islander Park, that area behind the store, and came back and used it in a whole class with steamed nettle and purslane. It was amazing. So we've had everything from that to celebrity guest chefs from L.A. come out, Jason Robel. We're hoping to have him back in March, so hopefully he can come back. He was a hit. He's a raw celebrity chef. So we've had quite a variety of people, and we're hoping to get local chefs on board, too. Like we're trying to get with Food on Main downtown and have them do a class here as well. So,
what was the response for the people that came to the classes?
Well, it's been really neat. It becomes almost like a little community. We have a lot of regulars that, no matter what the class is, they're here because it's just such a learning opportunity, and we all learn together. So no one's, there kind of lecturing. It's a lot more of a discussion-based kind of class. But people are so appreciative of information that empowers them to make changes, because it's kind of the 80-20 rule. 20% of what you do makes 80% of the difference. So even incorporating a few superfoods here and there, or a new way, or a new style of cooking, or a few new recipes can really revolutionize someone's health.
I totally agree with you, and I think, those are really excellent points. I hope everyone was listening. and then, like, what I thought was really exciting, too, is that you guys actually have events where parents and kids can learn together.
Yes. It's been really neat because we're so close to Hyatt and Apple Tree. I believe it's Apple Tree is the across the street, kind of like a preschool daycare. We've done a lot of partnerships and just bringing students here, bringing kids and their teachers and their parents, and giving them opportunities to learn. So we've done field trips where we do tours. Our farmers market always has a kids component. Like, we've had little activities where they could decorate food or learn how to, you know, use food in a new way. We always have food samples, and sometimes we have a jumper depending on the weather. So it's just a neat place for parents to bring their kids to.
Well, and I think that what you're doing right there is kind of a neutral location than home. And like some kids are kind of stubborn. You know, as far as like,
sure.
You know, I'm not going to let mom make me, you know, eat that broccoli kind of a thing.
Right.
But when you take it out of the home and you make it in a different situation where they're learning
yes.
together, I think it kind of creates a different atmosphere for change at home as well, and brings kind of something else to the parent and the kids to share together as well. And you guys have like during the summer, a special program for that. Right?
Yes, we're actually going to launch a healthy cooking series for moms and kids, or dads and kids, just based on demand. Again, we've had so many parents ask us, could you teach us, you know, how to dehydrate kale chips, and so we can do it with our kids and do it for our kids, you know. So that's something up and coming. We're hoping to partner up with PCRM, because we've done the Vegan Kickstart with them, to do kind of a series of kids cooking classes that they've already developed curriculum for. So
we had them on our show, and we're telling people about the 21-day Vegan Kickstart program. And so your store, if people are interested in doing that, your store is a great resource.
Yes, we got permission to use their materials and really advocate, you know, the program. And a lot of people were asking, what is this about? So we'd educate them, and we brought in some new products that, you know, kind of complemented the Kickstart, that complemented some of the recipes that they had online. So it's always good to, you know, spread the word. And this is a place to do it because people are here looking for information, looking for new things that are happening. And we love, you know, adding that educational and awareness component into, you know, a traditional business. So.
Well, it sounds like you create an atmosphere for learning all over, because sometimes, you know, people, when they go into a store like that, they see a lot of new products. They're not really sure what they are, how are they used. And so it sounds like you create an environment where, you know, people aren't afraid to ask.
Yes. Elaine, actually, you brought up a really good point. Is we've had a lot of customers come in and say, you know, I usually get intimidated by health food stores because I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to shop here. I don't know half the products that are here. And that's really a barrier for someone, you know, who wants to make changes but doesn't know where to start, you know, feels like it's almost like a cultural adjustment.
Uh-huh.
And to have kind of a family nurturing environment where we can educate and teach people to get excited about trying new things. I know when I first started working here, one of the first things I learned was alternative to coffee, you know, to Chino, like an herbal coffee. And but it was just so... You know, I guess you can say cherished, but when the owner was like, you know, this isn't on our menu, but, you know, we make it in the drink section, order it any time, and now I promote it like crazy because I love it. So it's something, you know, it really is kind of word of mouth and kind of leading people, you know, in this direction and encouraging them to step out of their comfort zone a little bit and explore, and that could be fun and exciting, and, you know, even your palate could be expanded. So,
yeah, and well, you guys are definitely my heroes for making that kind of a commitment. And please, you know, relay that on to Mr. Goodwin, too, because, you know, people don't realize, like, how hard it is to, like, run a store with all organic, because you can make money off of the other things. And it's like you're giving up that profit and for the commitment. So I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for joining us today, May.
Sure.
And I hope you can come back again and, like, tell us about some of when your activities start, so we can give everyone a heads up on that, so they can be sure and get down there. And please stay tuned, because we're going to be talking about one of your favorites, tuna sushi, in the next segment, and what's going on with it. So stay tuned.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
Naya, Naya, Naya Recycle.
Naya, Canada's most environmentally conscious bottled water, is very proud to announce that its already recyclable bottles are now made from 100% recycled plastic. Naya is the first bottled spring water in the world to do that. So in addition to its recycling activities, Naya uses no new plastic to make its water bottles.
Naya, Naya, Naya.
A natural source of progress.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back, Smart Health Talk listeners. So we're going to be talking about tuna today, but what is happening to the bluefin tuna is reflective of what can happen to all of our seafood. Our oceans look vast, but they're not invincible. We have today Catherine Kilduff. She's from the Center for Biological Diversity. From the East Coast, so she's actually calling us much later at night. And she's actually been involved with them as an attorney, because the organization is a group of attorneys, and they take on different issues that they know have a big impact on our health and our well-being and the future of this planet, including our food supply, of which I'm sure there's a big part of our listeners out there that are also sushi lovers, and tuna, of course, is like the king of sushi. You know, it's delicious, but a lot is happening to that tuna lately, and I'm just glad that we have people like Catherine out there fighting for, the continuation of the species and against, the safety and being able to even know that you can eat it without having to worry about things like mercury contamination and things like that. So, Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you so much
for that introduction. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you guys are out there, fighting the fight, and I really appreciate all that you do. And I know you guys do in lots of different things besides the work with the bluefin tuna. But today we're going to use this as an example, I think. Do you think that was correct in saying that this is really kind of reflective of what the vulnerability of our oceans and what could happen to, like, any number of seafood?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The Gulf of Mexico Restoration Report that they did recently last year after the spill said that bluefin tuna is a sentinel species in the Gulf, meaning it's like a canary in a coal mine. It's an indicator of the health of the Gulf, and not just the Gulf, but our oceans, because it's highly migratory, so it goes all across the ocean.
Well, so the Center for Biological Diversity, I've probably been stepping all over, the real definition of what you guys do, but so why don't you, kind of give us a little bit of a summary of what you guys do there?
Sure. So we try to protect endangered species and wild places, and we use science, law, and media. So it's a big part of our mission to do outreach and try to get the public involved, but the majority of us are lawyers, and so we try to incorporate science into the policy process through lawsuits and scientific petitions that we give the government.
Yeah, that's just exactly the kind of thing that I love. I could never be a lawyer. I chose to become a dietitian, but all of these things are connected, and we do need to bring them together to really kind of prove a point. So, have you always been interested in environmental causes, or did something happen later that told you this is what you wanted to do with your law career?
I've always been interested in the ocean. I grew up on the East Coast, going to the ocean and eating seafood. And a lot of my family is involved in businesses that depend on the marine environment. And so I knew that I was interested in marine science, and I thought I was going to be a marine scientist because, of course, it looks glamorous and you're on the water all the time. And I decided that science is not really my forte. But I love policy and practicing law, and so I've been really lucky to be able to find a place where I can put both my science background and my love of the ocean to work in the law context. And bluefin tuna sort of brings that all together, because it has so many dynamic aspects in terms of being so highly valuable as a sushi food, being a really important part of the ecosystem, and then also a very controversial subject in terms of law and policy.
So those are probably some of the things that really drew you to this issue, is that it was kind of all-encompassing.
Yeah, it really is. And, my grandmother loves the ocean, too. She's originally from Hawaii, but then moved to New England. And so she used to go out with my grandfather to catch bluefin tuna just on the weekends for fun. And so I feel it's very easy for me to see the generational change what the ocean used to be like when she was fishing is much, much different than what it is now. And so it worries me to think about what it's going to be like for my children in 40 or 50 years from now, because the changes have happened really quickly just in the past 40 years.
Yeah, and that's something I'm hoping that we can really stress on the show, because you know, for me, I think I'm kind of like the average person. I grew up with tuna, like always being there. You know, you think cans of tuna, you know, you look at the ocean vast, you know, there's got to be like a whole, you know, bunch of tuna out there, plenty for everybody. But yeah, I guess it's not necessarily that way.
Yeah, it's amazing how efficient we've become at catching tuna, bluefin tuna in particular, because they come back to one area to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so they aggregate. So it's really easy to catch them when they're on their way into spawning grounds.
Right, and that's and you know, later on I want to get into you know, exactly what you guys have done, because I kind of want to keep a little suspense there, because keep everyone listening, and we'll tell, you know, like the latest action that you guys have taken, which was really a bold action, and I know, you know, that you're doing it to really try to bring attention to, you know, what's going on here, and also just to take, you know, legal action, of which we can actually do in this country. So,
right. And it's not just fishing that's going to affect the bluefin tuna. There are numerous threats that are growing, such as climate change, and then just contamination of the oceans. So even if we can't actually catch the very last bluefin tuna or find it in a vast ocean, there's a lot of other troubles that it's facing.
So what have you learned along the way so far that has, like, been the most shocking to you and kind of, you know, made strengthen your commitment to making, you know, trying to do something about it?
Well, I suppose the scientist projections are the most frightening for me. I just mentioned climate change, and there's a paper out there that says that the Gulf of Mexico, which is the primary spawning ground for western Atlantic bluefin tuna, will be so warm as to be unsuitable in 100 years for them to spawn there in the months of April, May, and June, their current spawning season. So that just highlights for me how quickly the world is changing, and that if the species are going to be able to adapt to that sort of climate change, then we really need to not be stressing them by fishing them to very low numbers.
Right, and we're going to take a break right now, but then we're going to come back and we're going to be talking about, you know, all this overfishing that's going on and how it really is impacting the actual numbers of fish that we have available. And no, there isn't enough for everybody right now, so everyone stay tuned, please.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other, nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit ionchargeminerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Catherine Kilduff, and she's from the Center for Biological Diversity. And they've been doing a lot of different types of environmental type work, advocacy work. But what we're talking about today is bluefin tuna, because a lot of crazy stuff is happening with bluefin tuna. First of all, our population is increasing, but so is the appetite for tuna. And like some of the, I'm sure that Catherine is really familiar with this, on the record-breaking sale last month of one tuna, which was you know, 596 pounds and it sold for $726,000. So, I mean, that's just crazy. So what's happening that's, you know, that's, first of all, like, when did the problem with the dwindling tuna population begin, in your opinion?
Well, in around 1970, they figured out that there were too many fishermen catching fish not to have some oversight. So that's when they formed an international management body. And this international commission sets quotas for Atlantic tuna. But so it was really 1970 that they started keeping track of the decline in the tuna population. And so that's the best guess of what populations look like before we started fishing, was the 1970. And since then, it's been steady decline and then leveling off in the Western Atlantic bluefin tuna population, which is here on the U.S. coast. And then in the Mediterranean population that spawns the Mediterranean but swims to the U.S. coast, it's been up and down, but they've been fishing over there for thousands of years. So we really don't know what an unfished bluefin tuna population looks like. But the levels now are pretty low, even from the point at which we started noticing in the 1970s.
So, you know, they set up this tracking system, but they set it up because, like you said, they set it up because they knew there was overfishing before that. So
exactly.
So, you know, that's what you're trying to say, is that we really don't even know what a non-overfished population looks like because there is no data to even tell us that.
Right.
So, one of the things that I had read that, you know, they're supposed to be keeping track of all this and they set these limits, but, you know, those limits are not being enforced.
That's right. They've had serious enforcement problems for about the last 20 years. So since the mid-1990s. And the problem is that the fish is so valuable that it makes a black market very lucrative, and there's a lot of incentive for countries to take as much as they can because so many countries fish the stock. So it's really a tragedy of the commons. People want to get what they can now.
And so it's almost like it just everyone just trying to grab and get what they, well, shoot, if you could get one fish and make $726,000.
Right, exactly. It's very, very lucrative. And because there are so many countries and the management body, the International Commission, is consensus-based, there was no reason for the international body even to listen to the advice of scientists until very, very recently, when there's been more attention to how big a crisis the bluefin tuna really are in.
And as an example, I think in like 2010, don't they estimate it was like 140% over what the limit was supposed to be?
That's right. There's new data that just came out that Pew Environment Group looked at the market data. So they went to the market and said how much bluefin tuna is being sold out of the Mediterranean. And it turns out that what was being sold was almost two and a half times what they were legally allowed to catch. And this is really shocking because at this point, 2010, we're supposed to have recognized the problem that's been going on since the mid-1990s. And there have been many iterations of documentation schemes and plans to cut back on overfishing. And the fact is that there's always going to be a way around it if we are eating so much sushi and we will pay so much money for a single piece of sushi. And if you go to a sushi restaurant and order a bluefin tuna, it's most likely the most expensive tuna on the menu, and it'll be $30 for a very small piece of tuna. So everyone agrees, it's very overpriced because it's very rare and because it's a status symbol.
I see. And so it's almost like a cycle. It just fuels itself, and it just keeps like kind of picking up steam as it goes along.
That's right. And so it makes it a really hard fishery to manage because even when they set control limits or catch limits, a lot of times the fishermen will blow past those limits. And so you really have no idea about the health of the stock or really how close to being fished out they are.
And you mentioned earlier that they have new and better ways to like hunt tuna. So the tuna doesn't really even have a chance.
That's right. So there are spotter planes that are used off New England states in the U.S. So it's very easy for fishermen to know where to go to hunt the tuna. And in the Mediterranean, there are very, very large nets called purse seines that they throw over entire schools of bluefin tuna. So because they are schooling fish, it's easy to catch the whole lot of them all at once. And in the Mediterranean, they often take those and put those into ranches or fattening farms where they'll hold the bluefin tuna for 6 months or 2 years till they can get them to a legal size to actually harvest. So they essentially catch the tuna before they're able to reproduce, keep them and fatten them up, and then slaughter them for the sushi market. And it's been a real challenge to regulate the tuna farms because you can't actually see them going into the net, and then they're harvested at odd times later after they've been fattened. So it's really a black hole over there in terms of counting the fish and figuring out what's being harvested and what the impact is on their reproduction.
Is there ecological repercussions from these farms?
Yes, it's amazing because the Seattle's sardine fishery closed down early because they caught so many sardines to then ship actually to Australia bluefin tuna farm frozen. So it's like our smaller fish that normally feed seabirds and whales and all our ocean life onto the U.S. coast is often caught frozen and then shipped to bluefin tuna farms very, very far away. And it's definitely a huge problem for the ecosystem. It just can't support all this extraction.
And they don't they have like these giant ships too? They're just like humongous. They keep making them bigger and bigger and bigger than what they're supposed to even be able to be catching.
Right. And that's a problem for fisheries generally, is that there are huge factory ships that can go out for a month at a time and just freeze the fish and then bring it back to port. And so there is one author that has written that it's the fact that we invented refrigeration that is causing the decline of the fish. And that's true for bluefin tuna, because if we didn't have refrigeration, we couldn't pack up a bluefin tuna caught off North Carolina and then ship it to Japan to make $5,000 or $10,000. And it wouldn't be such a big problem to have this global market.
And really, the tuna's been taking like hits in a number of ways, and the overfishing is one of them. But something really critical happened last year with that BP oil spill as well.
That's right. The BP oil spill was awful, both for the loss of life, but also for the ecosystem effects. And it occurred on April 20th. That's when it started, and that's right at the beginning of the bluefin tuna spawning season. And so the entire Western Atlantic stock swims down the coast and into the Gulf of Mexico to congregate and spawn. And so at this point, the adults are more vulnerable because they're using all their energy to spawn and be in the Gulf of Mexico, which isn't their ideal habitat. They would rather be in colder waters where there's more food for them to eat. And then also because the eggs and larvae after that spawning activity get caught in the currents in the Gulf of Mexico, and they really depend on those currents to circulate them and then take them out of the Gulf of Mexico and up the coast. And those are the same currents that were washing the oil around, and there was fears that it would get out of the Gulf of Mexico and go towards Florida. And so any eggs and larvae that touched that oil would have been killed, and the effects on the adults are still unknown.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation, and there was another way during the oil spill that the tuna was affected too that we're going to talk with Catherine about, and you probably didn't hear on the news, so please stay tuned.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other. nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit IonChargeMinerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.
Hi, I'm Hanchi Danhek with Kickin' It Old School. Join me on Sundays at 4 p.m. and talk karate. We'll be exploring the world of martial arts, the Masters Hall of Fame, and much, much more. We will also discuss the impact of MMA, karate tournaments, and interview martial arts leaders. So join me and talk karate on Kickin' It Old School, Sundays at 4 p.m. right here on KCAA 1050 AM.
Naya, 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 recycle.
Naya, Canada's most environmentally conscious bottled water, is very proud to announce that its already recyclable bottles are now made from 100% recycled plastic. Naya is the first bottled spring water in the world to do that. So in addition to its recycling activities, Naya uses no new plastic to make its water bottles.
Naya, Naya, Naya.
A natural source of progress.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back, Smart Health Talk listeners. We're here with Catherine Kilduff, and she is from the Center for Biological Diversity, and we just finished talking about the BP oil spill and how that actually hit at the very same time that all of our precious bluefin tuna were overspawning in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, Catherine, the oil wasn't the only thing that was killing the eggs of the bluefin tuna. What else was killing them?
Yeah, that's right. We're particularly concerned about the use of dispersants to clean up the oil, and it really doesn't clean up the oil, but just pushes it into another part of the ocean and breaks it up into smaller pieces. And so what happens, it's almost like using dish soap to break up the oil.
I wondered about that stuff. You know, you saw them out there using that, and I was just wondering, you know, what is in that? You know, what kind of chemicals do they put in that, and, like, how is that affecting the rest of, you know, once it, like, seeps into the water?
Right. So the dispersants themselves contain a lot of chemicals that have been shown to have toxic effects on organisms or marine life generally. But then also the whole point of using dispersants is to make the oil more available to bacteria. So if it's very small, it has more of a surface area, and the theory is then it'll be more easily digested. But when it's digested, then it often travels up the food chain, and so that's not good either. No matter what, the oil and the chemicals from the dispersants are still staying in the water.
And so you guys knew, you guys were looking at all this. You're looking at the scientific data that's showing the decrease in the numbers due to overfishing, and you're looking at what happened with the BP oil spill and all of the spawning kill-off that happened. And what are you guys thinking?
Right. Well, so we've filed a lawsuit to protect bluefin tuna from overfishing in the U.S., and we've also filed a notice of intent to sue over the use of dispersants. So we're hoping that the government, given the dire situation, will take a harder look at the use of dispersants in oil spills generally.
And so when you go after the government, who, I mean, like, how do you do that? when you file the lawsuit, how does that work?
So the Endangered Species Act requires all federal agencies, when they're taking an action that could affect an endangered species, to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service or the National Marine Fisheries Service on what the effects will be. So in this case, in the Gulf of Mexico, there are endangered sea turtles, there are endangered whales, there are a lot of animals that you and I really care about. And so we challenged the Environmental Protection Agency and the Coast Guard, because those are the two agencies that oversaw the use of dispersants during the oil spill, and said you really need to do more studies on the effects on endangered species before you approve use of dispersants after an oil spill. And it's sort of a double-edged sword, because we don't want to limit any oil spill response activities, but at the same time, they need to act now, because oil spills can happen at any time, and they really don't know the effects of the dispersants. Even during the BP oil spill, they were doing research and asking BP to test the toxicity of Corexit, which they were already using, and it turns out is the only dispersant they had available in the quantities that they needed for the BP spill. But they didn't know the effects on the turtles and the whales. And
so we're not prepared for
this. That's right.
This
we're not prepared at all. And it's even scarier to think that the Obama administration is probably going to permit drilling in Alaska this summer, where we're even less prepared because of the harsh environment up there.
And then there was also another rule that had been changed, where they were allowing even more fishing, right? So the action that the government's been taking, instead of supporting and trying to limit the amount of bluefin tuna, they're actually expanding.
Right, and it's very sad, because we have laws to ensure that our fishing is sustainable. In the U.S., our fishing industry has lots of regulations to make sure that the populations of fish in the ocean aren't depleted, that future generations will have the ability to fish. But in the case of bluefin tuna, the fishing industry in the last decade has been unable to catch bluefin tuna to the level that they want, to the level that's allowed by the International Commission. And so, in our eyes, that's a sign that there's something wrong with the ocean and bluefin tuna if they're not available to our fishermen here, and that you would decrease fishing. But the government has taken the exact opposite step, whereas the bluefin tuna fishery used to be in New England for 5 months before 2004. Once they started being unable to catch the bluefin tuna then, they expanded the fishery down the coast, so that now there's the potential for there even to be a fishery in Florida. And this is because the bluefin tuna are migrating from New England, where they're getting fat and happy and eating all the other fish, to the Gulf of Mexico. So we're essentially chasing them down the Atlantic coast, because they're going to the Gulf of Mexico to reproduce, and catching the most reproductively important fish, just so we can meet our quota. Which has also declined in the last decade. So we're basically chasing the last fish that are out there.
Boy, it sounds like you're like shooting yourself in your foot, your own foot or something. It doesn't seem logical at all. And so, so that's all happening. So, what are some of the things that we should be doing to try and, protect the tuna ourselves?
Well, this is really an easy step for everyone to not eat bluefin tuna, and I think that's the most important thing.
Okay.
Because the government and the international world feels pressure to make money by consumers. This is all consumer-driven. Your money is going to illegal fishing, most likely, if you're eating bluefin tuna.
And it probably has mercury in it anyway, so just forget it. Don't even eat it, everyone.
That's right.
And, well, that, unfortunately, the mercury is another sign, like you were talking about earlier, that it's reflective of what's, happening in our waters. And the tuna is telling us that, we're being polluted with mercury, so just to let you know. It's
right.
Concentrated in the tuna, because they live longer and they're bigger. So, thank you so much, Catherine. This is, you've taught me a lot of things today, and I hope our listeners too. And I hope everyone walks away, thinking that to pass on that bluefin tuna when you have your
signature. Yes, and please sign our pledge at bluefinboycott.org.
Okay.
We take those signatures to support our policy action.
Okay, well, that link will be on our website. I'll be sure and have that on there. So thank you so much, Catherine, and your whole group.
Thanks.
Okay, everyone. Please visit our website, and we've got some new things. And go sign the petition for the bluefin tuna that Catherine is supporting. And join us again next week.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Hi, my name is Don Sozzi. If you enjoy the Smart Health Talk theme music, visit my website, www.donsozzi.com, to hear the complete song, as well as other great music.
KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM. The station that leaves no listener behind.